Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Yeah. And we got some really fun stuff for you today.
Of course we do.
Well, we always do, don't we?
There's never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment, man. So just to run down what we got coming up on the show for you today, our feature is with Tamara Rubin. Am I saying that right, Lynn? Tamara?
I believe so, with Let's Safe America.
Let's Safe America. We've been doing quite a bit of work with her, and she is having some fun stuff go on, including, isn't there some kind of fish concert that's going to benefit for her?
Yeah.
Organization?
And by fish, we're not talking about, like, fish you find in the ocean.
Not
we're
salmon.
We're talking about the group, singing group.
Yeah.
The rock stars. I don't know, what are they?
It's a jam band. It's a jam
band.
Anybody who's a deadhead pretty much knows fish.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not cool like you are.
No, I'm not cool either, but she's pretty cool. And so anyway, she talks to us today about how she got involved with this cause, and it's very personal for her, and she's been working with Ed Begley and a bunch of interesting folks. So,
right.
Our green dude, we have a green dude today, Ian
yes.
Monroe.
And his company is called?
Oro Eco.
And that is an app to track your climate impact.
Yeah,
that's an interesting conversation.
It is an interesting conversation about how you can, you know, we're glued to our darn cell phones or devices. So how do we use that? How do we capitalize on that and make it work for the planet? And obviously, he's got a plan.
Yeah, sounds like it. Then you talk to Mary Watts.
Yes, Watts, who?
I'm sure she gets that all the time.
I know, right? Really, like, we should have rehearsed like who's on first. What's on Hawaii? Because
oh,
she's out in
sure
Hawaii.
She appreciates that.
I know. She's actually had a lovely conversation with her from the island of Hawaii.
Lucky her.
About eco-style. And, you know, sustainability doesn't always mean sustainable manufacturing.
Right. So you got to keep your
you got to get it.
It's about you when you go shopping. And listen to the segment so you'll learn all about what that means.
Exactly. And then we do a rather fun and chuckly, if that's a word.
Right.
We chuckle at ourselves, a Green Diva's confession.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, must confess. Yeah, we're both
not perfect.
No.
I never claim to be perfect, by the way.
No, we don't. And we try to keep a sense of humor about ourselves, if nothing else. So, yeah, we are among 75% of other women.
In the U.S., at least.
Yeah, so you're going to have to go listen to find out what we're talking about. Meanwhile, we just finished a new video with Rainbow Mars, and it's Lynn's very first
surprise.
Video interview, and she did such a good job. Lynn, you
did
great.
That was my first one ever.
You did
you
a great...
You made me do it.
I made you do it, It was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, it was.
We were in
I'm really amazed that I actually could do it.
Well, I'm not, but we were in Rainbow Mars's beautiful home, and she was a very gracious hostess, and
a lot of feng shui going on there.
Oh, yeah. So it's really an interesting conversation. I love her point of view, and
mm-hmm.
so I'm hoping that people will tune in to our YouTube channel, and please subscribe, because we've got a lot of really cool stuff coming up on video. As I work my way through editing, and this is one of them. You really want to see what she has to say about health and sustainability, like health, wellness, mindfulness, and sustainability.
It's all connected.
It's all connected. So stay connected. Get the app, people. GDGD Radio. You want to listen to the Green Divas on GDGD Radio. So the app
is... Or go to greendivas.com and you can listen on demand.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, yeah, the app's available on all platforms, so do it, people. Meanwhile, listen up, stay tuned, and enjoy the show.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas Radio Show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Well, All right. So this, I loved this topic. And I really liked looking into this guy, Ian Munro, who, he's a Stanford University lecturer, among other things. You know, are you a doctor? I don't know. I can never, you know, remember. All these bios start to morph in my head. He's obviously a highly educated guy. But what he's doing, and I think he did a TED Talk that fascinated me, about how we can use our cell phones. I mean, you know, because like you want to say like, oh, put down the cell phone and go run through the woods. And I do like to do that from time to time. But we do have these cell phones. How can we use them to make change? So, Ian, let's talk.
Hey. Hi, Meg. Great to be here with you.
Yeah. So I loved your TED Talk.
Thanks.
And I loved the concept that, you know, instead of just growling at our cell phones because we, you know, we have to separate them from time to time, and then, you know, they can be very useful in this battle for climate change, you know, reform or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and I definitely am not advocating never separating from our cell phones, as I grew up on a little organic farm in Northern California, where I actually just came back from being offline for a couple of days, which was fabulous.
Isn't it heaven?
Yeah, it's a great part of the world. And so definitely disconnecting from technology is entirely important. But what I've come to realize is that our cell phones really are this extraordinarily powerful tool to enact the change that we want to see in the world, and have that start with just making our lives more sustainable, our daily choices more sustainable, and have that ripple to our friends and our family and the world as a whole. So our cell phones really are these hyper-connected supercomputers that can essentially inform all our actions to make them more sustainable, and more important than just putting information in the right places, really put incentives in the right places to act on that information.
Well, I forgot to mention in your my description of you, your little bio there in the introduction, that you are the founder of Oro Eco, which is a really cool app that I did download and play with this morning, which helps to actualize some of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's really, the vast majority of my time is going into bringing Oro Eco to life now. I do still teach courses on renewable energy and climate change at Stanford University, which is where I did undergrad and grad school as well.
Okay.
And my journey coming into Oro Eco was more than a decade now of working around the world on renewable energy and sustainability supply chain projects in Latin America and Africa and Asia, and increasingly realizing that we really have all the technologies that we need to solve climate change and a lot of our other large-scale ecosystem problems. We know the technologies and the policies we need to put into place. It's just a matter of putting those technologies and policies in place fast enough to avert major disasters, particularly with climate change, which is something I'm really personally passionate about, both because I've seen the changes happening on my own farm here in Northern California,
yeah,
and also because I've connected to many friends around the world who live in much more vulnerable circumstances.
Well, in your TED Talk, you had a very compelling opening about your personal, your personal motivation for this, having had a family home burn down in Northern California, and a lot of these fires are definitely, you know, climate change impacts this weather, this extreme weather.
Yeah, and we're really seeing extremes in both directions, which unfortunately is what the global climate models really predict is just going to be happening more and more, that we'll see record droughts and record floods almost back-to-back becoming the new normal. You're certainly seeing that right now in Texas, for example, after going through years of record drought. Now there's record flooding coming in, and California is still stuck in a record drought cycle right now. And that links up to wildfire and crop failure and all sorts of other problems associated with that. And then, of course, ecosystems and sea level rise and a long litany of impacts related to climate change and people and poverty that I'm sure you've talked about on your show many times before. So
yeah.
I don't want to dive so much into the really can be depressing apocalyptic details, but the good thing is we do really have this amazing tool,
right?
That is our phones in our pockets that we can use to put information in it kind of in the right places to take this massive collective action problem, which is climate change, and turn it into a collective action solution by getting us all engaged.
Well, and I love the idea of, you know, I think I know what my footprint is, or I think I'm pretty darn green, and then, but to kind of have a an app or whatever to you know, so Oro Eco has allowed me to take a harder look at what my impact may really be that I'm not aware of, like all the flying I do. You're right, but we do offset. I will say that I do offset pretty well.
Yeah, that for myself was actually a big driver in me wanting something like Oro Eco in my own life. And just for your listeners, a quick summary of what Oro Eco does is the first piece is just tracking, measuring our impacts on climate change, and basically going with a philosophy that you can't manage what you don't measure. Most of us aren't looking at our impacts
right.
on climate change on a regular basis. Maybe we've gone to a website once and done a carbon footprint calculator and seen a pretty bad number and
yeah.
not really felt empowered to do much about it.
Right.
So the first piece is we track your impacts on climate change based on how you spend your money and your lifestyle choices.
Yes.
And then we give you a bunch of personalized tips for what you can actually do to improve, ranging from large-scale things like put solar panels on your roof and drive an electric car, or smaller-scale things like use reusable mugs and bags and eat less red meat in your diet. And the big thing, as you mentioned, is flying. Actually, that for me is certainly the largest part of my carbon footprint, because
yeah.
I still do international development, renewable energy work in
yeah.
other countries. But
yeah.
it actually only takes about one cross-country flight
yeah.
to really put you up over the average American footprint.
Yes.
And the average American footprint already is about 20 times higher than what we need for stabilizing global climate. So it's been an interesting journey just for me, realizing that I really need to practice what I preach by at least offsetting my impacts as much as I can, as well as reducing my impacts where I can. And we've definitely gotten a lot of surprised feedback, I would say, from a number of our users that consider themselves really green, but unfortunately realize that many of the green things we do can be very easily outweighed by just one cross-country flight.
Yeah.
So really putting all our activities in terms of how we get around, our transportation choices, our diet choices, our shopping choices, our home energy choices, putting all those activities into context when it comes to climate change, giving actionable information about how you can improve, and a lot of improvements actually save you money at the same time. And then the next piece we're working on building in is really the incentive side. We really feel it's important to have everybody feel rewarded for taking action on climate change.
Right.
So we're building in points and prizes and really turning Oro Eco into a social game where you can compare, collaborate, compete with your friends and family and earn real-world prizes. Right now we're giving away Nest Smart thermostats and cash prizes to people for being more engaged in reducing
cool.
their impacts. And hopefully soon we'll be giving away larger prizes, like what I really want to be giving away are Tesla electric vehicles and home rooftop solar systems.
Yes,
but
please.
We're still a little startup, so we're working on getting there.
Well, in the meantime, there are other ways people can clearly use their phones, whether it's you know, to reach out. I mean, because most of us have smartphones now. Most of us do. And we can get involved with taking action, educating ourselves. We can take action by going to, you know, sign petitions or, you know, joining other organizations. There's just so many things we can do now while we are connected. But, yeah, I totally – in fact, I did a Green Diva Peace Out meditation, guided meditation called Tech Time Out, and it's all about, you know, obviously you have to use whatever device to listen, but for the most part, it helps us kind of get, you know, grounded and balanced, because that's what it's really all about.
Yeah, it's definitely all about finding that right balance. And the great thing is a lot of the things that we do disconnect from technology and stay balanced are generally more sustainable options in terms of the carbon footprint, as long as we're not traveling too far away to get there.
It's not sitting on airplanes the whole time.
That's the thing that really gets folks, yeah.
Yeah, well, we traveled to Hawaii last year and then California. I mean, within the last, really, I don't even want to tell you how many miles I've done on a plane in the last year. It's bad. So we offset, which, you know, it helps to some degree, but still, I think the best thing is to not be on a plane as often, but, you know. We're working on it.
Our basic philosophy with Orica is just improve as much as we're all willing to do as individuals and get rewarded for doing that by taking actions in our own lives that are more sustainable.
Well, until I can get
less, less red meat.
Exactly. Like until I can get my Green Diva Airstream and pull it up with some really cool electric or biodiesel truck, that's, you know. That's where I'm at. That's what I'm working on. I won't get to Europe that way, but at least I can do a lot of the, you know, North America at least.
Yeah, well, all we can do is basically take action where we can, where we're willing to, and then offsetting the rest, I think, really is an important piece in making sure that those offsets are coming from high quality, legitimate projects. With Orica, we are connected with a nonprofit called Impact Carbon that does clean cook stove projects. Primarily in East Africa.
Wow.
That really have a lot of additional social and environmental benefits. It's reducing indoor air pollution and the time that women and children spend collecting fuel wood in dangerous situations. And so there are all these other benefits beyond the carbon side. And so I really love supporting their projects, but there definitely are other offset projects out there that I don't feel so good about. So important to be selective, and we're trying to do that.
So you're doing the homework for folks.
On the platform. Yeah, exactly. And I spent some time doing international offset projects, so I definitely saw some that I thought were great and others that I thought not so much. So we're trying to only work with the great ones.
Good. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us and you know, helping us to look at our cell phones in a different way and take action, even deeper action, right?
Yeah, and to take action together. I think that's the other great thing that our cell phones empower us to do is to see how our actions are not just dropping a bucket, but really can connect up to be this ocean of potential, because we're all not just connected to our cell phones. Those are now connected to our social networks, and Facebook and other social networks are so ubiquitous now. We can see how we're doing versus our friends and our family and our neighbors. And it's really that social comparison, you know, the keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak, that can spur us to act competitively and also collaboratively to see that we're not just a single drop in the bucket, but really adding up to a much larger whole.
There is a community of us out there. So stay connected, folks. Find balance and stay connected. Thanks so much, Ian.
Thank you, Meg. It's been great.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
The Green Divas have a confession. We're not perfect, but we do our best to live a greener lifestyle and take action for the earth. Some of us still have to fill our cars with gas, and once in a while you might catch one of us drinking from a plastic water bottle or using a paper towel. Come on, folks, let's keep a sense of humor about it all. Green Divas Confessions. Shh, don't tell anyone you heard it on The Green Divas. All right, Green Diva Lynn, what are we confessing today?
I don't know. Do people really want to know?
Do we really want to tell?
Do we really want to? Well, 75% of the women in the U.S. use hair coloring products. And we happen to be two of those people.
Yes, we are.
I don't know what percentage we comprise. No, but we're two green divas, which makes it harder.
Well, it
is. And why we're confessing.
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, I would love to say I'm all natural and I'm okay with that. But my hair is a very dull, mousy gray-brown when I don't color it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not there yet. I'm a little too vain, just not ready to go there yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, it's society making us feel like we're not beautiful.
Damn them.
Our hair is going gray.
Damn them.
But yet men, I think men look great with gray hair, even if it's just coming in a little bit. But
yeah, yeah. It would be different if my hair actually was a nice color gray or going mm-hmm. white like my husband's, but it's
right.
not.
Yeah, he's got a gray head.
Yeah. So I know that the stuff I use my hairdresser I've been with forever, Dwayne Edwards, if anybody wants to know. He's here in Wharton, New Jersey. But he's mm-hmm. been using the lowest ammonia content possible.
Right.
So
that's
it's like
what my guy says. Jake Sinclair.
Jake. So, but he says it's impossible. Like, you're not going
right.
to be able to successfully color your hair if you don't have some of this ammonia stuff in
well,
there.
And I did go to an organic salon, and they did have a no ammonia product.
Mm.
But it didn't last. But the other thing is that it didn't look good. It was
funky color.
It was a little bit brassy looking, I have to say.
Ooh, you brassy girl!
I'm very brassy.
Well, now here's the other ridiculous confession. The number one post almost every day on our site that has had thousands and thousands of visitors is all about natural hair color.
Right. How to lighten your hair naturally.
Well, not just lighten, how to color your hair. They talk about all kinds of different
right.
coloring. And my sister did it 4 years ago, this post.
Well, and the thing is, there are so many chemicals in hair color. So
here's my confession. I have never done any of those things.
I haven't tried it either. I think back in the old days, I used lemon on my hair.
Yeah, all right. I've done that.
I don't
that.
Think it even worked.
Oh, that did work, by the way.
Oh.
That totally
worked for me.
Yeah. But, so once in a while we get a comment, someone asks a question. Gee, what happens when you do the coffee? Do you have to make it? Whatever question. And I'm like, yeah, can't help you because I've never done that.
Right.
Now, my sister, she has, so I have to get her on the line
Bravo
and say,
to her.
Can you answer this question for this woman? Because
there's not a lot of information out there as far as, what kind of studies have been done about how it impacts the environment. It does go down the drain, and these are chemicals, so they're going out there into the world.
Well, yeah. And listen, we do so many reports about all the chemicals in our world, and they're just starting to learn how some of them impact us on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really even knows yet how all these chemicals interact together. So
right.
if you're doing your hair, but you're also smoking, or you're doing something else, and your body's absorbing all these different chemicals. I mean, a lot of people, when they're pregnant, don't get their hair colored if it's that, if it's that big of a concern when you're pregnant, maybe it should be a concern when we're not pregnant.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, by the time I'm 70, I figure I will stop coloring my hair because by then all of my hair might be gray.
You got a long way to go, girl.
Maybe sooner.
Yeah. Now here's another quick confession and then I'll let it rest. But I haven't colored my hair. I've been tempted to try my natural color for a while.
Mm.
And it's been 3 months. I'm almost afraid to call my hair guy because I know he's just going to kind of lecture me. But I am trying it right now. And it's really not that different, actually.
Well, I did go about 3 months, and I do wait a long time between appointments because I just don't feel like I have the time. And
yeah.
I got scolded. It was like, have you looked at your hair? You really should have called me sooner.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I get yelled at every time. So anyway, we'll keep you posted as we find and discover new ways to do it. But for now, we are Green Divas that color our hair.
Green Divas Confessions.
Have a Green Diva or Green Dude confession? Share it with us on social media or on thegreendivas.com. And let's all remember not to judge ourselves and others as we trudge this happy road of destiny towards a more sustainable way of life. And don't forget to listen to the Green Divas Radio Show on GDGD Radio. That's GDGDRadio.com.
I'm Ed Begley, and you're listening to the Green Divas Radio Show, the entertaining source for low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green and take action for the Earth.
The recent climate talks in Doha, Qatar, revealed the greatest threat to the increase of global warming. And guess what? It's humans. More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
While the debate rages on over exactly how much impact humans have on global warming, one thing is for sure. We are 100% responsible for doing something about it. For one simple reason. It's our only home. Getting global agreement on reducing emissions of greenhouse gases that are building up, elevating temperatures around the Earth, is a slow process. While the politicians pontificate, the planet progressively gets warmer. The storms get worse, the droughts deeper. Denial is more than just a river in Egypt. It's our Achilles heel when it comes to global warming. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
No one ever said you had to give up style to be a green diva or dude. Check out this Green Divas EcoStyle segment for all the latest trends in sustainable, ethical, gorgeous EcoStyle. Well, we are talking to Mary Woods, who is a seam siren. I just love that. That's the name of her company. She's a slow fashion creator. And, you know, she's in Hawaii, and we're going to have some fun today talking about how just because a fiber says it's like bamboo or some kind of sustainable plant or one that we think of as sustainable, that doesn't mean the fabric that is made from it is. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
I'm good. And I like this topic because I have learned over the years that it's a little deceptive sometimes that what it takes, perhaps. And maybe you can explain, like bamboo, for instance.
Sure. Well, there are lots of different ways, or actually there's two main ways, a mechanical way and also a chemical way to process fiber. And so a lot of people, even though people are calling things sustainable or it's a, you know, might be like a green line, it actually does not mean that it actually is that way. So
yeah.
With bamboo fiber, most companies, it's just too expensive to do things a mechanical way. So that's actually where people are harvesting the plant and they're using natural enzymes to break down the fibers and then drying it and weaving it by hand. A lot of people are using really caustic chemicals, and that's really common, especially with the bamboo fiber.
Yeah, which is a bummer because I'll tell you, you know, a lot of bamboo fiber ends up being kind of soft and cushy. So tell me about the fiber that you've been working with. I'm curious.
Well, there is. So what I would say is a way to tell if what you're, the bamboo that you're buying is actually made chemically or mechanically and actually truly sustainable as if it's bamboo linen versus bamboo. So most of the reason that it's so soft and wonderful is because of the chemical processing.
Yeah.
So the material I'm using is from a plant called nettle. And right now I'm sourcing it from the eastern part of the Himalayas and support a women's cooperative.
Wow.
And I traveled off there and watched them do everything with machetes where they actually cut down the plant. And then there's a 14-step process that they utilize that actually takes it from the plant into a fiber that you can use on your body. And so it does feel more like linen. I have to blend it with organic cotton, which also comes from Nepal, to get it to feel good on your skin. But the 100% nettle is much like hemp. In its raw form,
okay.
So it's a little bit more burlappy.
Right.
It's great for bags and lots of accessories. I have like dog collars and leashes made from it that are really durable.
Oh, I got to try those on our Gracie. Green Diva Gracie.
And that's also the reason I got into it is I'm actually an herbalist, and I started studying different cultures and their traditions around the fiber usages. And what was interesting in Nepal is that the nettle, if you take nettle tea, it's a natural antihistamine. So I knew that from studying plants. And then when I
it's funny because when you said nettle, like, is she talking about like the nettle I'm taking right now for allergies?
Oh, totally. It's the same nettle. So what was interesting to me was that they're actually using it on their skin if they've got eczema or psoriasis or anything. I mean, they don't call it those things. They don't have that same categorization that we do here. But they're using it for antihistamine purposes on the skin. So they believe in its fiber form, it's still doing the same medicinal action that we know it as in tea.
So do they actually make clothing out of it then?
They do. Yeah, they use it for their ceremonial garb. So it's not something that they've really tried. You know, it's a third world country, and there is a history of nettle fiber production in Europe around World War II, and Napoleon actually made his soldiers' uniforms from it.
Oh, that sounds kind of cruel.
Yeah, but it's a different plant. So the reason it's still in the nettle family, but the stinging nettle that we're drinking from tea yields about 5% fiber, where this giant stinging nettle in Nepal yields about 25%, which is much closer to hemp.
Wow,
it's actually stronger than hemp, and the bast fibers are really long, which makes it really desirable for fabric.
Sure, right. No, well, I was thinking Napoleon using it, making his soldiers wear it like raw, might be a little like itchy and rough, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a really interesting fact about the history of
nettle. It is. It actually, I mean, I've never heard of nettle being used in fiber historically or otherwise. So this is all very interesting.
Yeah, it really is one of my favorite. It's one of these plants when I was using it in practice with clients where it's really pretty benign. It's really safe.
Yeah.
And it's really nutritive. So it has a lot of iron and calcium and lots of minerals in it. So it's pretty, they actually use it in pregnancy too for kind of like a prenatal vitamin that helps get your system ready for that. So I just, when I learned that a lot of plants aren't good for all different body types, like you have to be careful because everyone's biochemically different.
Right.
But nettle is one of these plants that's great. So when I learned it was made from fiber, or that you could make fiber from it, I was really interested in learning more about that. So
now
I can't say medicinal clothing because of the FDA, but
but it is. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So you can eat your clothes, but what about the dyeing process? Do you do that in Hawaii?
I do. Yeah. So we're using in Hawaii. Everything grows like weeds here, but using plants that are considered invasives or they grow here naturally, and then I'm using hibiscus and wild indigo, which is actually invasive here, turmeric, and then another plant, fennel, which a lot of people hear from. So they're actually a myriad. There's so many different types of plants I could use for dye, but because of the color palette and also the availability of these plants, these are the main ones that I'm using.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to take a look at some of your products. I'm going to go online. I'm sure there are an array of pictures, but I am really fascinated by this concept of nettle, and I'm sure there are other things that people have been using in different parts of the world, but
definitely in different, you know, it depends what continent you go to, but most tribes in kind of third world countries have kept these traditions alive of utilizing plants for fiber. Even, but you can make fiber out of banana trees or even eucalyptus.
Right. So I know that you'll share a post with us, and in the meantime, people can go. What's your website?
It's seamsirenmaui.com.
And that's S-E-A-M, as in seamstress, seam siren.
Yeah.
Maui.
Siren, like a mermaid.
Aw, that's so cool. Well, I'm glad you called and, you know, shared some of this with us. And we will hopefully talk again soon about other cool stuff you're doing and helping us understand more about natural fibers and textile process.
Yeah, things that are not polluting the environment are always good.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks so much, Mary.
Thank you so much for your time, Meg. Take care.
Want to have sexy Green Diva style too? And learn more about low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green? Visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Almost 40% of all the land in the United States is publicly owned. The nation's parks, wildlife refuges, and forests help prevent climate change by absorbing carbon dioxide in plants, trees, and the soil. Now some of them also host renewable energy projects. Kit Muller is the National Landscapes Coordinator with the Bureau of Land Management.
The BLM has approved over 16,000 megawatts of solar, wind, and geothermal projects on the public lands and is on target to approve 20,000 megawatts by 2020.
Muller says restricting new energy development for renewables or new oil and gas wells to areas that are already disturbed will help conserve the integrity of the remaining undeveloped land. In addition to preserving public lands, Muller says we can also help them adapt to the higher temperatures, extreme weather, and increased wildfires associated with climate change by restoring areas that have been damaged by human activities or natural causes. With careful planning, Muller says our beautiful national parks, forests, wildlife refuges, and other public lands can contribute to climate change solutions. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
I don't know how I have not spoken to this woman yet, because we are friends on social media. I follow her and I'm just love. I can't say I love the information that she shares all the time, because it's a little scary, but I love that she's out there advocating and raising awareness about lead in our lives, which is far more pervasive than I think people realize. Tamara Rubin is an eco-warrior, to be sure, and a green diva. She's a mom, an activist, and a filmmaker, and I'm really glad to finally get to chat with her. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, and yeah, I mean, I don't think we have it. Did we meet in Detroit once? Were you at Detroit?
Yeah, I don't think ever.
Yeah, see?
It feels like we have.
I know. See, that's so funny. Like, Lynn and I, that's how Lynn and I, you know, got working together, and we just were like, felt like we'd known each other forever, because we've been out fighting these battles and having fun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell me, you know, I saw the trailer of your film. Your film is not completed yet. It's almost there, and I'm really looking forward to this. I saw the trailer, and I was like, oh, wow. This is pretty intense stuff. Tell me how you got into this. Clearly, it was personal.
Yeah. And my kind of personal tagline is, I make women cry and throw out their stuff.
Yeah.
that's what I do. I mean, people meet me and talk to me and learn what I have to share, and they end up crying.
Wait, and before I do anything, I forgot to say that the name of the film is Misled. Sorry, go ahead.
Misled, America's Secret Epidemic. And the film is a documentary that came up when I realized that, you know, as a mother of lead poisoned children, which I am, the most effective way to get the message out about childhood lead poisoning, which is still very pervasive in the country, would be to share stories, because personal stories are what make the impact. And
yes,
so what I did was I toured the country interviewing mothers of lead poisoning children across the country, as well as experts and top scientists. And the focus of the film is to be engaging and get people to understand that this is their problem. This isn't somebody else's problem, because the federal government, public initiatives, anything funded through the CDC and the EPA and health departments has been focusing on not scaring anyone about this. We don't want to scare moms. And also...
Maybe they should.
And not making people think that this is a low-income, substandard housing problem. So
Right. Almost
every article that you see in the paper or on TV, and any piece says this is a low-income problem, when in fact, it's an everyone problem.
Yeah.
Lead poisoning doesn't discriminate. And in fact, 1 in 3 American kids has had an unsafe level of lead in their blood in their lifetime. And
wow.
So it's really shocking. Yeah. So the biggest fact for us greenies, as environmental activists, but the thing that makes me so angry is that there was an environmental impact report done by Leonardo Trasande, who's a professor and researcher and actually a pediatrician who's currently with NYU Medical Center. And that impact report showed that the total cost of environmental toxicity on our children is $76.6 billion annually. And that $76.6 billion includes, you know, mercury and BPA and all these other things. But of that $76.6 billion, lead is $50.9 billion.
Whoa. Whoa.
So even though mercury and BPA and you name it, a different toxicity issue, all those issues are a problem, all of them lumped together don't even equal half of the impact of lead in terms of the economic impact. But the lead lobby is so strong, and the funding behind it is so strong, and the business of lead is such a huge moneymaker with growing profits every year, that they have a really well-financed machine in place to make people think it's a problem of the past. It's not the biggest environmental toxicity problem today. It happened in the past, and it was solved with the 1978 ban on lead paint.
Okay.
None of which is true.
Wow. So my mind's already blown, but let's go back, and I want you to talk about your story with your kids.
Yeah, sorry, it got sidetracked.
No, it's all good. There's a lot there.
Yeah. So my kids, we were repainting our home. I was a kind of a historic preservationist. I really loved historic homes. Even from when I was a kid, I grew up near Boston, and I used to work as a volunteer restoring historic homes that were being turned into museums. And I just thought, you buy a whole historic home, that's the American dream, and you redo the siding and remodel the kitchen and, restore as much of the original as you can. And I loved that. And so when my kids were very little, my son Avi was 7 months and my son AJ was 3 years old, we lived in a home on the historic register in Portland, Oregon. So very important piece of our American history. And I decided I was going to restore it. And I hired a painter who was going to repaint the exterior. And he said that he would do it in a safe way. And instead, he didn't do it in a safe way.
Oh.
He used an open flame torch, and he burned the lead paint off the exterior, and my babies inhaled the fumes because they seeped into the house.
Wow.
They were instantly poisoned, yeah.
Oh, that's terrifying. And you were okay, but I guess children are more vulnerable. They're small. Their systems are more vulnerable, but you were okay?
Well, they didn't test me because I was an adult and they don't test adults. But what I know now from an environmental study that was done last year, that was published last year by actually one of the scientists who's in my film, is that even maternal blood lead levels as low as 0.5 and lower can lead to low birth weight in newborns and complications during pregnancy.
Wow.
And so in my fourth pregnancy, with my youngest son, Charlie, I had tested positive for lead, but they said it was low enough that it wasn't a concern. But he was born very, very tiny.
Aww.
He was 5 pounds, 10 ounces compared to his brother, who was 8 pounds, 7 ounces.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And during his pregnancy, I was I was dying of preeclampsia, which is kidney failure.
Yeah.
So those are both impacts of lead exposure, even though the doctor said I was okay.
Now, with your children having been exposed and actually poisoned, what is the treatment for that?
There's no treatment, and that's the hard part that people want to believe otherwise. But there's ways to deal with it. There's ways to help. There's ways to get around it. But once basically the brain absorbs the lead in the place of calcium, so the younger a child is exposed, the more quickly their brain is growing, the more lead their brain is going to absorb. And what it does is it actually kills the neurons in the brain.
Oh.
And the question is, can you come up with remediations and interventions that will both help detox the lead from the body and also give the kid a chance to develop new neurological function that will compensate for the lost neurological function? And that is possible, so there's hope. But at the same time, it's, you know, the single most preventable environmental illness and also the single most devastating in terms of the permanence of the impact. So,
well, it's pervasive, isn't it? And I think people don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just freaking out because I live in an old house. My grandchildren are here now.
Oh, no.
You know, they're not eating.
Did I send you test kits yet?
No, but I'd like to test because, gosh, you know.
Yeah. 3M has been one of the most important sponsors. So basically, my kids were poisoned in 2005.
Yeah.
And I did all this stuff, and I was on TV. I was on the Today Show. I was in USA Today. I started a website. But the thing that, again, made the most impact was telling stories.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I decided to found my nonprofit, Lead Safe America Foundation, at leadsafeamerica.org, to actually, you know, engage people in the conversation and share stories and help people. And as a result, 3M has been a major sponsor of our work, and they donate an unlimited lifetime supply of lead paint test kits for me to give away to families around the country. Last year, we distributed, I think, nearly 16,000 test kits to families.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. And now I know because I've seen a lot of your posts where you test things. You have a way of testing products, you know, whether it's a kid's toy or a Pyrex bowl or something, right?
Yes, that's another instrument. Another sponsor of ours is Thermo Fisher Scientific. And Thermo Fisher Scientific makes an instrument called the Nikon XRF. And so that's a $40,000 scientific instrument. You can get them for $20,000 or $30,000, depending on the model.
Oh my gosh!
And it's my fun toy. This is where I start having fun. It's like I'm trained and certified in using the instrument, and I point it at whatever I want to point it at, and it tells me the elemental makeup of whatever's in there. So it's my geeky moment where I get to. It's super fun.
So obviously over time you just pick things and you've probably creating somewhat of a database about things that are high in level or unacceptable levels of lead.
I'm the database in my head. I'm trying to create a database that's a searchable system, maybe even an app with pictures and the levels. For example, I've got the Pyrex bowls. Like you mentioned, the Pyrex bowls are like 200,000 parts per million lead. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you that Pyrex bowl is poisoning you. I will never tell you that. But I will tell you that bowl has lead. If you hold that bowl up to the light and the light shines through, you will see like little holes in the pigment where it's worn off over the years.
Yeah.
And the pigment is what has lead. And where does that pigment wear off? It wears off into your kitchen. So, it's probably adding to your overall, you know, total environmental toxicity burden in your body. And why should we have a leaded bowl that's unfortunately vintage and maybe pretty when we could have a clear glass, plain, nice, lead-free, non-toxic bowl instead?
Oh, my goodness. And so the lead, they're still using lead in paints and things that would go in our kitchen or things that our children might play with?
Yeah. In terms of the kitchen stuff, it's sometimes an additive. It's not as much an additive as more as a contaminant.
Okay.
However, the total lead content in a kitchen item isn't regulated in that it's allowed to have any lead content, although they try and have it comply with either Prop 65 standards, which is labeling standards, or leach standards. But a lot of things, it can be sold as not intended for children, for example, if it's a toy, and it could have really high lead. So if you've got, my nightmare example is costume jewelry in the store. If you go to Kmart or Walmart, God forbid, and you go to the costume jewelry section and you want to buy something for your 3 or 4 year old, well, you might go to the adult jewelry section and buy some really cool pendant or necklace for maybe, you know, $5 or $10 and say, wow, this is grown-up jewelry here. You know, you can play with this. And in fact, the reason it says not intended for children is because it's like 300,000 parts per million lead, when the amount of lead that's considered unsafe for an item intended for a child is as low as 90 parts per million.
Oh, okay. So we all need an education.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing. I can't wait till this film comes out, although I'm a little nervous.
I tell people, live like your grandmother or your great-grandmother.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's what I think the movement is back to basics anyway.
Yeah.
And wherever you can, look to pre-industrial revolution for toys, for jewelry, for clothing, for food. You know, that's where we need to go if we want to be sustainable as a race.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to poison ourselves otherwise. But, you know, honestly, my Pyrex, my Pyrex bowls, the vintage ones, come from my grandmother.
Right. Well, okay, so you're a little younger.
My
grandparents then.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, our great-grandparents are, well, whatever. Yeah, obviously that's a good rule of thumb to yeah. Well, Tamara, and so people can go to leadsafeamerica.org?
Right, and they can ask me for a free test kit there to send them to a test at home. These are test kits that sell for between $9 and $15 in stores, and I just send them two kits for free if they ask.
Oh, so I got to do that.
Yeah, I'll send you a box.
I'm on it.
And then the other thing is, you mentioned the database. Well, one thing we are doing is, in our travels, you know, I go to people's homes and test their things, and a lot of times they freak out and give me whatever it is that is positive for lead. So I am creating a little museum exhibit that's going to hopefully be touring science museums around the country in the next 18 months or so.
Wow.
And it's going to have each of the items I've tested, and it's going to say how much lead, cadmium, mercury, or arsenic is in that item. And so it's going to have, you know, my Barbie dolls that I've got from somebody in California that have really high lead, and, you know, dishes that have high arsenic and cadmium and lead. And that will show people, you know, where to look for things in terms of the most common objects.
Wow. What a great, great thing you're doing. Thank you, Tamara. And I'm looking forward to the film and, learning more cautiously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for all you're doing. And hopefully we will get, I know we're going to get to talk again soon, because I don't know when this will come out, but I know that you're organizing a really fun Twitter party with Ed Begley and Alicia Silverstone. So that will probably have occurred, but I know we're going to have fun with that.
Yeah, and hopefully that'll be a monthly thing. So,
party on.
If people want to ask environmental questions in the areas of green building, healthy housing, sustainability, even veganism and other ways to keep your family safe from environmental toxicity, we're going to have this monthly Twitter party with Ed Begley Jr. and his celebrity guest friend.
Oh, that'll be so much fun. We love Ed.
Yay.
We love you too, Tamara. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com.